Play with Pain. Hosted by Emmy-winning comedian and writer Jeff Cesario. Interviewing guests from comedy, entertainment, and sports. Plus, legendary sportscaster Chet Waterhouse. Don't worry, this shouldn't take longer than your average trip to Costco. And now, here's your host, Jeff Cesario.
Welcome to Play With Pain. Man, we got a good one today. I am bothered by a sliver in my finger, but either my producer, Gary, or I'm guessing my guest, Jackie Cation, may have some weirdo Wisconsin home remedy where you like you rub, you know, like trout oil on it or something. Anyway, my guest today is a comedy machine. She's online. She's on Twitter. She's on stage. The hilarious Jackie Cation. Jackie, how are you today?
I'm good. Do you have a lathe? That's always the question when I was a kid. Like, you don't want to get that out of there. Do you have a lathe? Okay, no, all right. I'll just a standing saw. Do you have one of those? And you're like, calm down.
A coping saw. Help. All right. We're going to dive into this and help my sliver. We're going to talk Wisconsin, maybe some worse gigs, some other fun stuff. Ooh, I can't wait. But first, Chet, are you ready for a sports update? Like Madison Cawthorn's ready for a silk teddy, time for the Waterhouse Update, sponsored by Auto Body Experience. Hover 20 feet above your car repairs at Auto Body Experience. NBA playoffs. Golden State takes a 3-0 lead on Dallas. Said Mavs owner Mark Cuban, "We got just one guy scoring. We can't stop Curry. And for those reasons, I'm out." Luka Doncic scoring like Bradley Cooper at the Sundance Hooters. But to quote Cardi B, "One man ain't enough." I think she said that probably somewhere in one of... Anyway, added Draymond Green. Anyone want to give my mom credit for adding a D to the front of Raymond and making it the coolest name ever? Meanwhile, Miami, like that hustler in the parking lot who says he can fix your collapsed bumper for $60. They just keep coming at you. That wrap-up sponsored by Floorgasm. The floor wax so shiny, you'll shudder with desire. NHL playoffs. Calgary and Edmonton in a barn burner of a series. Said America, could they make the puck bigger or something? NFL. The league wants to kick out Washington owner Daniel Snyder after sexual misconduct scandals, toxic environment accusations, and cooking the books. Said Dallas owner Jerry Jones, "Look, we all have sexual misconduct scandals and toxic work environments, but cooking the books, how dare you?" That item sponsored by Lotions 11, the smoothest, most radiant heist gang ever. America's pastime. No, not missing dessert and calling it intermittent fasting. Baseball. Yankees and White Sox fought so often this weekend, they're booked on Dr. Phil. And finally, this week in sports history, the year 1884, the place Chicago, Illinois. Chicago Browns one-armed pitcher Hugh Daly struck out 13 Cleveland players. Said Daly afterwards, "Honestly, Cleveland is horrible." That Waterhouse update sponsored by Dick Tucker's. Women's clothes for men. Back to you, Jeff. Why, thank you, Chet. That was it. I like that one. That was pretty solid. Oh, listen, my guest today works so hard. She makes James Brown look like he's on a chaise lounge at Seth Rogen's. The hilarious Jackie Cation. Jackie, how are you today? You look fabulous.
I'm good. I like the TikTokers. I like their sponsorship. You got to, you know, sometimes you got to row your own boat. Anyway,
yes.
That's some analogy. I don't actually have all the information for.
It's a very Wisconsin thing, which is one of the things I want to hit on. You're from Wisconsin. We're both from Wisconsin. How much Wisconsin is coursing through your blood?
Well, the weird thing about Wisconsin is I have lived in Los Angeles low these 25 years, 26 years, long time.
Could also be interpreted as loathe these 25 years.
I love it personally, but weirdly nice. weirdly enough, whenever people ask me where I'm from, I say Wisconsin. I'm from here. I'm from Los Angeles.
Right.
And I always say I'm from Wisconsin, but I live in Los Angeles. Hi, I own a home. My husband bought a house and then we married. And so I am part owner of a home
In Los Angeles, where you're paying massive taxes and thus should be a proud member of the state. And yet I do the same thing.
Right.
I'll just say I'm from Wisconsin because I think it gives them maybe a clue as to why sometimes I'm not there or I don't know.
Right. It you know what? It lends a certain amount of humanity to our lives. Yeah. I mean, when you say to people, I'm from Los Angeles, they picture, I believe, some wheatgrass and possibly a lot of sit-ups. I'm uncertain. But whatever it is, this doesn't scream, I'm from Los Angeles. When you
psychologically, if you say I'm from Los Angeles, the first thing people think is, oh. But if you say I'm from Wisconsin, they go, oh, that's kind of interesting.
That's weird. They think it's a little weird. They're like, oh, my great aunt lived in Wisconsin for 11 days. And then you're like, where? And they're like, oh, Appleton. And you're like, home of Houdini. Let's do this.
then you're off and running. Yeah, it does. It lends a certain element of weirdness.
Woman came up to me
after
the show last night. Woman came up to me and said, we're both from Wisconsin. And then now what would you say? Because I'll tell you what I said after, but I'm sure you said something comparable. Maybe not. I don't know. She said, I'm from Wausau. What did you say? What would you say?
Wausau. I would say North Central. That's what I would say. I always try to geographically pin
it. Do you geographic it? I go to the ad that I heard when I was a child. WAUSAU, USA in the middle.
Right.
That's why the Posse Comitatus hangs out in Wausau.
That today would be shot down before the pitcher finished pitching it in the ad meeting. Look, guys, it's WAUSAU with you. All right, no, it's too long. Sit down, please. You're the one who's going to get coffee.
Too funny.
But yeah, so now you grew up in Milwaukee. In the Milwaukee area, is that?
Yeah, a little factory town outside of Milwaukee, which is essentially just a suburb of Milwaukee or Chicago right now.
Yeah. I was going to say that especially back then, is completely redundant. Every little town between Chicago and Milwaukee, for the most part, was a factory town.
Yes.
Kenosha, where I'm from, Racine, South Milwaukee.
Which is where I'm from, yeah.
There you go, yeah.
It was Bucyrus Erie, which is now a Caterpillar plant.
Right.
And employs hundreds as opposed to the thousands it used to. But
right.
That's fine. It made strip mining equipment. So how much are we going to mourn it? Though in the 70s, they did start making reclamation equipment, which, you know, create your own industry, I see.
Yeah. Hey, look, they're trying to make amends. You got to hand it to Bucyrus Erie for that. You could define my neighborhood, and people cannot understand this, by how many factories were within like a mile radius of just my dopey little lower middle class suburban house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then you tell them Kenosha when I was growing up was A, 25% Italian, which people can't believe. And then B, only about 70,000 people when I was growing up.
Right.
And I can name them. I mean, you know, there was American Motors was the big one.
Yep.
Then there was McWhite Wire Rope. There was Triclover Ladish.
Laddish?
What's the tool?
Was it?
Yeah, Triclover Laddish. Yeah.
Yeah.
We pronounced it Ladish. Just because.
Did you pronounce it Ladish?
Yeah.
It's maybe it was the Italian. And
hey, Ladish.
Because we had mostly Polish and German, you know. So
sure, yeah, exactly. Snap-on Tools. It just goes on. I mean, there was like Eaton. Manufacturing. There were six factories within walking distance of my house.
Right. Well, we had what was the name of that place that my brother dropped out of high school and shoveled sand for a living for about a week, and then he was like, "I'm going to finish high school." And
this is not remotely unusual for somebody with Wisconsin ears. What was right. the name of that place where my brother dropped out of high school and shoveled sand for? Oh yeah, that's right. I remember that. Sure.
It was called Appleton Electric. That was it. It was Appleton Electric. And then there was another place that my mother worked at for a little while that made neon signs called Everbright. There was a neon sign factory on the outskirts of town. And then BE was in the middle, Bucyrus Erie. Sure. And then Lattish was in Cudahy. And then, but BE was so huge. Like Appleton Electric, there was a lot of sort of smaller sort of machine shops and stuff.
Yeah.
That were just like, well, we make the bolts that we sell to the people. And you're like, good for you.
It's impossible to explain the Rust Belt to anybody who didn't live there, that there were hundreds of those shops.
Well, I live in Van Nuys.
The widget that attached to the bracket that somehow put your rear view mirror on your car.
But right. And for some reason, they weren't mass produced. For some reason, they had to get seven dudes to make that. And it was like, oh, hello. And it was a union shop. So,
of course, it was a union shop. That's why the required shot of your crotch, apparently.
Right. I just dropped my laptop onto my own lap because I'm having a hard time.
I'm guessing the neon sign factory was on the outskirts of town. Because it would have been too bright in the center.
The weirdest thing about it is that it sounded so cool. You're like, oh, you make Coca-Cola signs, you make this, you make that. It looked like something Henry Pym. Like it was like the most, it was like windowless box of nothing. And it was
cinder blocks.
Like Soviet brutish, you know, sort of architecture. And you're like, and it was a little too close to the lake, which made you just assume in retrospect that they were dumping it all into Lake Michigan, whatever toxins, which is why the beaches were covered in alewives when I was a kid.
Oh, and, me too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, then the EPA got invented and it's better now. So that's good.
Yeah, that is good. And I'm sure they called the insurance company and just got reimbursed for $1.5 million neon sign links. Oh. Yeah, those were always the kind of buildings where you go, oh, okay. I can see how someone could snap and just start making lampshades out of people.
Right. A little Ed Gein action. Yeah, I know. My mother did not work there long. She was not. It was my family doesn't lend itself to factory work. I don't know. I don't know why. It's just perhaps the pay was too good. We were like, there has to be another way to make this money. And how can I?
The pay was too good.
Yeah. We were just
there's
like,
there's got to be a harder way to do this.
There's got to be a harder way to do this where I can also go for coffee three times a day.
That's South Milwaukee, baby. Hey, that one's sponsored, guys, by the Dollar Confederate Statue Store. And, of course, Rocket City, the JetBlue of space travel. Back to you guys. So do you start comedy in Wisconsin?
Madison.
Or do you move? 84. You start in Madison. Wow.
By accident. I don't know. How did you start by accident? Or was it purposeful?
It was purposeful. I had a little, every time I was drawn to comedy. I'd watched The Tonight Show as a kid and seen those comics. I'd seen Franklin Ajayi on The Tonight Show tell this joke with that brilliant, laconic jazz rhythm of his. I could not imagine the balls. He came out and he goes, this is way before Tiger Woods. He goes, I would like to see a black man join the game of professional golf just to add the element of speed to the game. And he told it even slower. And I went, that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. I have to do that.
That's it.
And then
that's amazing.
Every time I was in a comedy club sitting there watching, I would have to leave. I would have to go, I'm not supposed to be watching this. I'm supposed to be up there. That's why I started.
That is an interesting. We never watched. We listened to Zig Ziglar. We listened to a lot of motivational speakers and sales pitch guys when I was a kid. And there was no
cinder block house.
No, we had the old farmhouse in a subdivision.
Wow. So the last holdout that they couldn't get to sell.
right.
Wound and up selling, and my father, you bought the house.
Yeah, and my father, aluminum siding, windows, doors. There's absolutely no reason why our screen door should have been ripped. There's absolutely no reason why we had the shittiest aluminum siding in our block. Anyway, but except for that, my dad was like, hey, I got you a free microwave. Leave me alone. Anyway, so the first microwave on the block. So
at least your dad said, leave me alone out loud. Most of the dads in that area of the country never verbalized that far.
No. The great thing about my dad is that he will just be like, my brother Phil told me this. He said he asked my dad one time if he had any regrets. And without missing a beat, my dad goes, no. Father has been married 3 times. He has 6 children. He literally cheated on my stepmother for 9 years. And when he was caught, said, not 9 years in a row. And you're like, oh my God, you have no regrets. He was like, what would I regret? And
wow, that is world-class Southeast Wisconsin Hall of Fame right there. He's up on the American Legion and the Let's Bowl. Wall.
He was, he was in the Navy. He was a medic for the Marine Corps, and so he was in the, he was sort of,
which
in the Marines,
means,
but he was
that's,
in the
that's
Navy.
Like a month training, is that for,
no those guys actually... the in real life, like the those guys are like the heroes of the Marine Corps. The weird thing is that the Marines get their medics from the Navy, and they're all part of the Navy Department, so I get it, but my dad did not know that the Marine Corps got their medics from the Navy. So he was like, so I'm hanging out with Marines for like 6 years. This is terrifying. They were really cool guys, but I'm just saying, I don't need to. And then, and this was in between Korea and Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And when he heard about Vietnam, he's like, oh, I won't be reenlisting. Yeah. There's there's no chance I'm going to Vietnam. No. Yeah. Thanks anyway. And
right.
He's like, I'm not going to go protect a bunch of recon Marines.
Yeah, I served 6 years, but not 6 years in a row.
Right. His 6 years, he has the greatest stories. I should probably record them. But
should. Definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Get him down. So you're in this, let's just call it magical, for lack of a more accurate term, magical youth.
Sure.
And you're listening to motivational speakers, and you say, and what in you goes, this is funny, or what is the light that draws you like a moth?
I will tell you that the closest I can, the first time I realized that I wanted to remember and possibly create comedy, I was watching an episode of MASH. And it was a later episode. So it wasn't even the early great episodes. Charles, the character Charles, right?
Sure.
Said something, and it was so sarcastic, but it was perfect, right? Uh-huh. And I was sitting there, and I said out loud, I got to remember that line. And my dad said, why would you need to remember that line? Which is ironic, since when I started doing stand-up comedy, I listened to, he and my stepmother had some comedy albums that I never listened to from the 60s. And I listened to them, and they were a bunch of storytelling comics, Jewish storytelling comics from the 60s. And my father had cannibalized at least 3 or 4 stories, had stolen the material.
Literally ripped off Myron Cohen.
Yes, exactly. And I called him on it, and he goes, it's not stealing. I'm a salesman. I'm not a comic. You're not supposed to steal jokes. And I was like, you are not wrong. And so I've spent like every seven sentences I say to my father is, you're not wrong. And
sure. Well, that many years with the Marines, you learn how to hammer out truth.
Well, my favorite thing that just happened was probably 2 months ago now. He calls, I talked to him, and he's 85, but he still sells, right? And he sold some awnings to this funeral home for their basement windows. And I was like, basement windows, why did they need awnings for the, and he goes, there were a bunch of kids trying to see bodies.
Peek in.
So they wanted to cover that up. And I said, did they need to buy awnings? And he goes, no, they could have bought shades, but I don't sell shades.
Exactly.
And I was like,
tip of the cap. I'm telling you.
You are not wrong, Elliot Cation.
This guy's got a plaque at Gutormson's Bowling Lanes in Kenosha, Wisconsin right now. One of the greats. What's your dad's name?
Elliot.
Elliot Cation. Bam. Right on the wall.
I'll tell you. One of the weirdest things about growing up in Wisconsin was that Nancy bowled, my stepmom. She had a bowling league for a little while, but we never bowled. I took bowling in high school because, of course, it was offered, and it was called biking and bowling. And I was like, I thought it was like polo, where I would bowl from the bike.
But from the bike.
But it was bike to the bowling alley, bowl, bike back to school.
Oh,
bikes,
man.
Not included. And so... But I will say, so when I went to college, I went to Madison, and in the
Go Badgers,
fuck a Bucky. And so second year, by the way, I went to Madison because I wanted to be in the band. That's why.
The marching band?
Yeah. And I auditioned for the marching band, and my brother was like, "You can't be in the band. I got you a job." And I was like, I want to be in the band. He was like, you want to make money? You don't want to make money.
The Wisconsin Sophie's Choice.
And so I sold t-shirts outside the stadium.
Oh, wow.
I've never seen a game.
Wow.
I know.
That's
were fucking
crazy.
Fucking Bucky t-shirts. And they were
to this day,
Wisconsin.
You've never seen a game?
Yeah.
We got to get you to Camp Randall.
I know it. And, I do have a band cap. I have a baseball cap that says Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin band with Mike LaCrone's signature on it.
Oh, wow. Incidentally, folks listening, this is actually a direct line. This is very direct Wisconsin storytelling. We are getting to how Jackie Cation gets in the This is just, this is not a lot of tangents for Wisconsin picnic storytelling.
Right. And then we went to 4, 5, and 6 over in Grant Park. Anyway, so here's the scoop, folks, is I'm in Madison, second year of college. There's a comedy club opens up, and I don't know who says, let's go, but we go. And I'm sitting, and by then I have already embraced my drinking problem. Right. So
sure.
I was weaned on Pabst and Ho-Ho's. So, but once you go to college, so I'm sitting right against the stage, right? I'm in the two top right here. I don't even remember who I was with, but whatever it was, I was so excited. The comic was not having a great set. It was okay. And when I tell you at the end of this who it was, you're going to be surprised. But so I heckled him because I was hammered because I had not been out. What I had been told is that when you go to a theater event, my stepmother had said, you know, when you're sitting at a table and there's wait staff and they're just bringing you drinks, you tip every time instead of at the end of the night with a tab.
Yeah,
so
right.
I was getting
so you're
shots
losing
and
money.
Beers. I'm losing money. The wait staff is on me because I am like, I do the shot. I drink my beer. As soon as my beer's done, she's like, oh, is there another dollar in this for me? Allow me to come
I'll
back.
Take station two. No, I got station two.
So I'm just hammered and the guy is having a good one. So I'm yelling. I end up yelling stuff. It is an indictment against anyone who heckles me. It was a horrible experience. And so, cause I'm the kind of heckler that A thinks I'm helping.
Sure.
I'm just yelling.
What heckler doesn't.
Right. I'm just yelling stuff. I'm drunk.
Nothing's quite making sense.
And I'm a woman. So even if you're a woman comic and the woman is heckling you, the audience for some reason is on the side of the heckler. It's very weird. And and the one line that landed, I think, was, and which encouraged me to continue. The only one that was lucid was the guy said that he was from Peoria. And and his timing was slightly off. And so there was this beat and I said in that beat, I'm sorry, which is the dumbest, you know, it's just, but in the moment it got a laugh, right? And so all of a sudden it's like heroin. I'm like, I'm in.
Oh, wow.
And so then I won't shut up. I will not shut up until finally the manager comes over and he goes, you have to shut up. You have to shut up. There is an open mic on Sunday. So shut up. Come to that. And so 3 weeks later, Stone Cold Sober, I came back and I did open mic and I got a 1.8 that semester, Jeff Cesario.
Well, that's flying.
Because I did stand up every night for 8 months.
That's brilliant. What a great story. Until the club
burned down. Yeah. And who did I heckle? Who did I heckle? Oh, yeah. Sam Kinison.
Holy shit.
The club was owned by his... Yeah.
That's not a guy who pops to mind when I hear his timing was a little off.
Right? Right.
So this must have been... he's chopping wood in local clubs before he even gets to LA.
Well,
my guess, or
it was, this was in 84, right? So it's probably 6 months before he does Letterman, and Letterman's on the floor. He's doing the Ethiopian joke and then Letterman's on the floor. So he just has a bad night. He just has an off night. And part of it is the coke and the drugs and the, you know, and all the things. He's there with Freddie Asparagus and Carl LeBove.
Yeah.
And
he's got his posse with him.
He's got his posse with him. So he's successful, but he is not yet huge. He has not yet blown up. And as soon as he does Letterman, he blows up. And the club is owned by Bill Kinison.
And it burns down. I didn't know he spent time in Madison.
Well, they had this club. The club burned down. Gus, the guy who owns the street. I talked to him about this a couple of years ago in Madison.
Street.
Gus owns all of State Street now, but at the time he owned like a fourth of State Street. Gus currently owns all of State Street. Wow. Things are going well for Gus and his daughters who are.
And you know really what's, you know what was the impetus for that? Mm. Insurance money he got from burning down the club.
Well, that's what Gus told me. He said, I didn't get a dime. Bill got all the money.
Oh,
And I whenever I tell this story, and I'm not talking to a comic who knows, right? I usually say, luckily the place was insured, and then I just let it sit there. and I usually get nothing.
What are the odds?
What are the odds?
Interestingly enough, they had a life insurance policy out on the club as well. They went full.
They also had right pet insurance, everything. They lost a cat. No, I don't know. Yeah. It was but it was such a. But those 8 months of me doing stand-up every single night, I still have, and it's only the Xerox. I did that. I cashed the check. I have Bill Kinison's original check that he gave me.
That's priceless. That's great.
For $10.
Great thing to hang on a wall. That's perfect. So you get your juices flowing. You
better
get
than
rolling,
that. Yeah. Go ahead.
And now you lay in underneath it this sort of classic Wisconsin work ethic, which we've already talked about, which is A, chip on the shoulder, B, great work ethic, and then C, this weird, how can I make this even more difficult as sort of a Catholic punishment for enjoying what I'm doing. You lay that all out, and now you really are doing an unbelievable amount of stuff. You like rode through COVID. You're like, all right, let me go to a place where people are naturally 6 feet apart. South Dakota, book me 9 rooms there.
I didn't work the road during lockdown. 16 months I was home, which I have never been home 16 months in 40 years. I have not been
still home. Married?
Still married. Turns out I like this guy. And it's kind
what
of
are the
great.
Odds.
I could not have called it. I don't know that anyone could have called it. And
I don't think the priest called it or married you guys.
But I will say we did add a little room onto our garage, which we call the room of requirement because we're nerds. And so that's where I did Zoom shows on this very laptop. I did at least 4 or 5 because I was set to record my new album and my new special right when we went into lockdown. We had to push it. We pushed it, I think, twice. And then I ended up filming it in July of 21. And
where'd you film it?
Acme Comedy Company.
Oh, my great. That's where I did mine.
Yeah, Minneapolis. And so, but I did Zoom shows and I helped Acme actually set up Zoom shows for them.
Right.
And we just did Zoom shows just to generate revenue when they were in full lockdown. And then when they were, then they could open with like 25 people, they would push the show to Zoom because they have the greatest setup. They have the greatest video setup.
Sure. So and you're the key to this. You were.
Well,
you
I was
were
a helper. I was a helper.
The Svengali. Yeah. Let's be honest. Give yourself more credit than that.
Yeah, right. Like I think of myself as a meddler, but I think that I did good work. And
every meddler does.
Right. Though my mother, my stepmother would always say, don't help unless you're asked. But when you're asked, do it right. So which is a classic Wisconsin statement.
That really is.
That and wash, wipe, and put away, live to eat another day. So she was like, please wash your dishes.
And hey folks, that tip brought to you by Stripper Pole, the fishing rod that'll make them dance right into the boat. And of course, Zigzag Zip Cream. Your zits will never see it coming. Serpentine with Zigzag Zip Cream. Back to you guys. All right. So you're cooking it down. You're doing live shows. You're doing podcasts. How do you meet Lori Kilmartin? Because that seems like a
we
match.
Never met. We weirdly enough, we're the almost exactly the same age, but we had parallel careers. Except for she also went into writing, because she came up in the Bay Area, San Francisco, and I came up in the Midwest, and all of my road stuff stopped at Colorado. All of my one nighter stuff.
Sure.
Yeah. And then Wits End, not even Denver, and then stopped in Indiana on the other side. And so that, and then I went south of there, but that was it. And then I would occasionally fly to New York and try to get sets, but never came to LA. So moved to LA. She was in New York. We met the first time, which we both barely remember, when I did Tough Crowd. That was her first writing gig, was writing on Tough Crowd with Colin Quinn. Yeah. And then
that was like walking into the middle of somebody else's family fight. That I did that show twice.
Description. Yeah. Yes.
Cause I always said, I just want to come in and do my seven jokes. I don't really want to insult anybody. Cause I don't really know you folks that well. Cause Colin would do that opening monologue. Colin Quinn hosted it and had a lot of great New York comics on it. But it would go like this. All right, peace in the Middle East. It'll never happen. We're going to examine this and that. Well, what do you think the Jews' responsibility is for this? And then Craig Robinson or somebody go, fuck you.
Right,
and the horse
right.
you rode in on.
Right, right.
And Craig I don't Giralda. Like your shirt. And yeah, then yeah. bam. And then they're just beating each other up.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, yeah. It was like paintball.
Right. It was like the worst experiences in green rooms of the last 40 years where you're just like, I'm just ball busting you. You don't want to sit in my face. Don't sit in my face. And I'm like, I don't want to discuss this. Can we not do this? And they're like, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, I don't know. It's 3 a.m. Let's go to breakfast. And are you kidding me? So
yeah. But this was on air. On yes. Comedy Central.
Right. And they all knew each other. You're right. I mean, one of my favorite lines was, I think, Lampanelli, who, I mean, they were all trying to be the biggest fucking pill in the world. And Lampanelli says to Rich Voss, I love how you're pretending not to be a 60-year-old guy who's whitens his teeth or something. I forget what it was, but it was like, it was brutal and it was surgical. And you were like, oh, you guys know each other. Right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It'd be like me making fun of Maria Bamford. I could do it.
Yeah.
She would collapse into a puddle. It's not, you know, it's not going to, she could do it to me. And I would be like, why are you hitting me? Anyway, but that, I mean, that's like, that's Colin and Keith Robinson and Norton
yeah.
and all, and Giraldo. Yeah. And Giraldo. Giraldo was the sanest of the lot, and that guy died. So you're like, I was like, why do you hang out with those guys? He's like, oh, they're funny. And I was like, yes. Okay. Okay. You're funny, Giraldo. Anyway, so. Yeah.
So you meet Kilmartin there?
I meet her very briefly. She moves here. We run into each other a little bit. And at the improv. And then out of the blue, she's like, do you want me and Kathleen Madigan, who I had also never met. And Kathleen Madigan's from St. Louis.
Right.
And also right. almost my exact age. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
So, but huge, like theaters and stuff. Right. So just better at the business as far as I could tell. When I met Kathleen Madigan, it was Last Comic Standing and she was judging. She was judging. And right. And she came up to me after my set and she said, tell me you are making at least $5,000 a week doing the road. And I said, no, is there anything you could do about that? She was like, I promise you, I will try. And she did. And it didn't help. Yeah. But I am up. Numbers are up. So
they're trending. They're trending in the right direction, as they say.
Right. So Kilmartin calls me and she's like, hey, me and Madigan, both giant Irish Catholics with a Kennedy obsession, we both want to do the Dork Forest. Can we do it together? And I was like, sure, come on over. So there's a Dork Forest with me, Kathleen Madigan, and Lori Kilmartin talking about the Kennedys and me learning about the Kennedys. Brilliant. And then it was amazing. Wow. So years later, because I think that was in like 2012, whatever. But years later, five, 6 years ago now, Kilmartin is friends with Runtowski, Karen Runtowski, who's another great comic, almost exactly my age, and Paranormal
All
Karen.
All the great ones are.
Yeah.
Apparently. Almost right, exactly right? Your age.
Almost exactly my age, except for those who are slightly older who are also great. Last night, I ran into Kathleen Madigan and Wendy Liebman.
Wow.
And I was
I love
like
both of them. That's my wheelhouse. Came up with both of them.
Right. And they're epic. They're just like up there. It's like watching an NFL guy just play catch to see them at the Yoo-Hoo room at Flappers. You know, you're just like, you're just watching. It's like, oh, I once went to I saw Martina Navratilova and Chrissy Everett play a friendly match of tennis. And it was like, it was the weirdest experience because I was like, they're amazing. And they're literally phoning it in. Anyway, so it was like that. But so Kilmartin 6 years ago says to me, hey, do you want to do a podcast? And I'm like, you did my podcast. I have a podcast. It's called The Dork Forest. I've been doing it since 2006. And she was like, no, I know, but you want to do it. You know how like there's a lot of podcasts where a couple of middle-aged white dudes talk about stand-up comedy? And I was like, yes. And she's like, do you want to be middle-aged white ladies who talk about stand-up comedy? And I was like, with you? Sure. And so we talk about stand-up comedy.
That's
1 hour.
Great.
1 hour. That is it. I listened to her bitch about how she should be more successful and try to explain to her that she's eminently successful. It's all working out. I believe she's even got a pension one day. So it's all going to be fine. So
it's all working out. It would be a great title for something. I'm not sure if it's an album or not, but I like it's all work. Hey guys, you know, speaking of the Irish, brought to you by River Glance, the Irish dance sensation where only their eyes move. And of course, acetaminophen. Blow the aspirin right into your face with acetaminophen. Back to you guys. Listen, oh we're basically out of time. I don't want to, we have to do this again just because we're only halfway through the Kilmartin
questions?
Experience.
Okay. Well, that's fine. Just go to the, you can, if you have,
we'll do a semaphore version of this and I'll put that up online. Exactly. And you can finish the Kilmartin story. Listen, nothing funnier than Jackie Cation. Follow her on Twitter at Jackie Cation. Give us some upcoming dates. Where are you working? What are you doing? And how do we find the podcast?
Okay. Well, if you go to JackieCation.com, which also I bought the URL familypetancestry.com, it just leads you to JackieCation.com because it made me laugh. Wow. Family Pet Ancestry. It's sponsored by familypetancestry.com. Do you want to know if your cat came over on the Mayflower? Is your dog eligible to join the Dogs of the American Revolution? Go to familypetancestry.com. And you can check out my
results. Of familypetancestry.com, not guaranteed.
You get $100 worth of $100 worth of DNA. So your DNA test is worth exactly what you pay for. I found out I was white. Anyway, so
South Milwaukee, I can guarantee that.
It has both podcasts. It has a bunch of clips of like Conan, and I just did Late Late Show with James Corden. It has NPR. Right. It has all those clips. If you want to see what kind of comedy I do, feel free to find out before you come and see me. I'm opening my next gig on the road, actually, is East Coast. I'm opening for Brian Regan.
That's fantastic.
In New Hampshire and Massachusetts and New Jersey. So
those are great gigs.
Yeah.
I love opening for Brian.
And then
I've done
after
it
that,
myself a couple of times. Yeah.
It's neat, right? Great. And well, you get to see Brian Regan. That's why I do it. I was like, oh, do I get to watch you for an hour? Then I'm in. And then he's also very generous. But so the other than that, I have a bunch of, you know, I just booked Portland. I'm doing Fort Collins. I'm doing Minneapolis on my birthday week in July. And
fun.
And then I'm I'm hoping to book some other stuff because I need some work. My mother-in-law's moving in, Jeff.
Oh, that is something I believe you may have mentioned.
The Jackie and Laurie.
Obliterated a previous booking, I believe. You said you
I don't know.
Casually mentioned it, and I said, well, there's 9 weeks. That shot, not only shot, but someone may get shot from that.
That's not
an easy transition.
As much as, and I love my mother-in-law, but I was like, I said to Andy, I was like, did you want me to cancel this gig to help you? And he goes, no, you may become the primary breadwinner. Please go on the road. And I was like, twist my arm, go on the road.
Yeah. And green light. So listen, go to JackieCation.com, look up a club near you and go. It's eminently worth it. And if she's opening for Brian Regan out in New Hampshire and New England, go see it. Ridiculously great night. Jackie Cation, everybody, thank you so much. Just amazing. Really, if you get a chance, go see her. Follow me on Twitter at Real Jeff Cesario. My album, What Was I Thinking, also recorded at Acme in Minneapolis. Streaming everywhere. Play with Pain mugs up at jeffcesario.com. Grab one of those. Father's Day coming right around the corner. Perfect gift for Father's Day because it's not a lot of money and it's not a lot of effort. And that's what dad's like. Look for me soon on the road. I'm actually starting to book stuff now. So check my site, jeffcesario.com, for that. Chet, what do you got cooking? This weekend, I'll be in Mount McCracken, Wyoming again, calling the 14th annual Drunk Giant Slalom for SkiLarious.com. First one down the hill wins. Dead or alive, this is the special slush edition of Drunk Giant Slalom, sponsored by Tempur-Pedic, the lightly fried adjustable mattress, and My Pillow Case. Make any pillow your pillow with My Pillow Case. This is Chet Waterhouse reminding you to play with pain.